You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
Ah, yes, and we have appropriate professionals in the house. It's Prout Financial Design, New Retirement Radio on WTCM as we welcome the gang back, starting with Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On Thursday, August 18th, Heidi Cartwright joins us, our own RICP and managing executive.
Good morning. It's good to be here. It's a beautiful day once again.
It is gorgeous. We'll take early fall, right? Early fall, just
it's
crazy.
Not early fall. It's no morning. Summer. It's summer.
You tell them.
Late summer, early fall. It's a cotton blue dress. Ron and I were talking about this beforehand, how different women are with descriptions of clothing versus men. And
yeah, but that's not even, cotton blue is not a color, is it, Heidi?
Cotton blue? I don't believe so. I have not heard that one before.
You've proven my point.
Indigo, indeed. There's a lot of different ones.
Right. And also joining us is Deanne Jennings, our own Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Great to have you here with us. So today, before we get going, we have a ton of stuff so many things to discuss in the financial realm. But before we get started with, do Roth conversions make sense at any age? And what are some of the misconceptions of the Roth? A huge article from Ed Slott we're going to be discussing, as well as Heidi's going to be discussing the significant increase in personal debt that people are taking on, too. She'll get to that in the second part of the show. And then Deanne's got some great stats this week. Very interesting in terms of the Inflation Act. More details, perhaps, than you want to know. But anyway, we think it'll be helpful.
Can I start off with a quick question that I think is an easy one?
Yes, sir.
It was in the news this week, and it's been building. They think Social Security recipients will get the biggest cost of living raise ever or in a long time. But when does that take effect? Are you going to cover that today?
Yeah, we have something on that.
We'll see if we get into our trap, Ron. But it's
good
actually
lead-in question.
It's calculated through 9/30 of this year. 9/30 of this year, it's calculated. So we should know here by September 30th. Is that right, Heidi?
Yes, indeed. We should know by then. And it's looking like it's going to be a record year for the COLA.
Dennis is the wizard of the obvious today, just checking, make sure. Were you listening? What did he say again? Now, by the way, if you have a question of a financial nature that we here might be able to help you with, we'd love to hear from you either via text or the phone.
You can call the phone line at 947-0023. That is the 231 area code, 947-0023. Or shoot a text message to 237-7855, 237-7855.
I was laughing at how you said that. I was thinking, well, be careful how you say that, Ron. Shoot a text message. Roth conversions for all ages. Roth conversions for all ages. And we're going to discuss three major tiers, if you will, of possibilities for people in terms of age group. Young, middle age, rather wide span, if you will. And then the older folks as well. Could it make sense for all three? But first, a couple of questions. First, is your Roth conversion limited by your income? Is a Roth conversion limited by income? No answer.
I know the answer, but I don't think you wanted me to say.
The answer to that is no. You are not limited by your income to completing a Roth conversion, the only thing you're limited by is, do you have money in an IRA that you can convert to a Roth? You are not limited by income. Two, are you limited by your age? It may make it not as valuable, for sure. Third, is the amount that you can convert limited by year? Is the amount limited? Heard the other day, a couple came in, they said that they were under the impression that it was $100,000 that they could only convert. I said, no, inaccurate. You can convert any amount, depending on how much tax you want to pay on the conversion. In that particular instance, that can be very beneficial. In some cases, a Roth conversion can be a great planning tool to offset losses from a business. So there are a lot of reasons you may want to consider a Roth conversion. Roth conversions for the younger set. Oh, by the way, I skipped ahead.
Oh.
Dennis, methodical, not so much. By the way, we also attended a Hillsdale estate planning class this last Monday evening here.
Yes, we did. We went up to Petoskey, and it was a very interesting course. It had a lot of different ideas on people who are charitably minded, who want to give to an organization. And there are just so many different ways that you can do it to fit all different situations. And so it was very interesting to see how they presented the material, and we always learn something new every time we go.
And your daughter and son-in-law joined us as well, which is tons of fun. And my gosh, he was the football quarterback for
yes.
Hillsdale, right?
That
wow.
is correct.
All right.
Yep.
So it was fascinating, some of the things that they shared, and we intend to have the gentleman who taught our class to join us here in some coming time.
Okay.
And he's already been with you, he mentioned, on the radio show.
From Hillsdale.
From yes. Hillsdale.
Okay, good.
And his name was...
Uh-oh. Wasn't Calvin, was it?
No.
Wasn't Dr. Wolfram, Gary Wolfram? Wasn't, that wouldn't be Carrington.
Would have been Rob, sense. Rob something.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
yep.
The estate planning.
I met him
he teaches that whole arena yep. there. Fantastic yep. teacher. Did a great job. Just so memorable. Yep. Anyway, and secondly, our classes are coming up at NMC.
Yes, they are.
NMC is helping us host classes, and they are on the website Retirement Planning Today, a course that happens over a two-week period, three-ring binder. Go ahead, Deanna, mention the details if you
yeah,
would.
Yeah, absolutely. It's called Retirement Planning Today, and there'll be two different classes. One is October 13th and 20th. That's your Thursday class. And the other class is October 18th and 25th, which is your Tuesday class. The classes are 6 to 9 p.m. And if you want to register for those classes, just go on the NMC website, click Life Enrichment, and then personal finance, and then you'll be able to see our class there, and you can register, or if you would prefer, you can call our office at 231-947-3992, and we'd be happy to email that link to you.
Great. For those who want to talk to a live person, we'll help you out. And that class, I love teaching it because it's thorough, methodical. It's great information. It will, for those who want to get updated on what's happening for retirement, even those who are already retired, generally the ages we see at that class are anywhere from 50 to 55 on up to about 75 or so. Because it's a great class to catch up, get more information, see what's going on in everything from the estate planning, long-term care planning to investments. So very thorough.
Ryan Rickle.
No.
Hillsdale. All right. My bad. Thought I had it there.
Thanks for trying,
okay.
Ron.
Next time I'll bring his card with me so we can remember.
Yes, indeed. All right. Yeah. Ben, Roth conversions for the younger set. Why could this make sense? Why? You generally have a lower tax brackets. Time is on your side. Time is always helpful in paying something up front, given the time value of money. Thirdly, the tax bill. Pay attention to what the taxes will be on this conversion because you'll have to pay them. And the danger part of this, the negative part of this is if you have the tax withheld from your IRA, to pay for the conversion, you'll pay a 10% penalty on that amount that is not converted and used to pay the tax. That makes it doubly expensive. So make certain that you can pay the tax with funds that you have saved otherwise.
Right. Something in your checking or savings, maybe.
Right. Indeed. Oh, question.
Oh, here.
Questions. Several. Well, we should, let's get to those texts, shall we? Would you just read them, please?
I will read the text. For the Prout program, I just became a trust beneficiary. Do the assets step up in basis like inheritance?
Yes, they do. They do step up.
So that means somebody had a trust, mm-hmm. passed away, this person was a beneficiary, they received certain assets. Do they step up in basis? What does that mean?
Great question. So that means that you're not going to owe the tax when you go ahead and liquidate it. So let's say there are three beneficiaries of a trust.
Okay.
And we have Johnny, Susie, and Sally. And they're each getting a third through the trust. Great names, right, Heidi?
Oh, that's See? Great.
Johnny, Susie, and Sally. Now, Dick came by, has nothing really, I'm sorry, Dick and Jane, never yeah. mind. So what's interesting about it, let's just say to keep it simple, that they each inherit from the estate, through the trust rather, $100,000, $300,000 worth of J.P. Morgan stock, you know, whatever. And that stock, the original owner or the original trustee paid, let's say $100,000. Well, now it's worth $300,000. Who's going to pay the tax on that? No one.
No
because
one.
It's part of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
So the step up simply means that the children do not pay the tax on that gain. They get a step up in basis. So when they inherit, let's say they decide, I want to take that J.P. Morgan stock. Or let's say you get a part of the house and the house is sold. There is no tax on that liquidation. Okay?
So there is no tax. No one pays a tax on it.
Right. It's because of the estate planning rules or regulations, if you will, within the tax code. Unless the estate is subject to estate tax. Now, that's a high number. It's about $12 million per individual these days. So per couple, it goes up to about $24 million that passes outside of the estate taxable range.
Hmm.
$24 million, not a small sum, eh?
So if they did not have a trust, and let's say in their example, parents passed away.
Yes.
And they had $100,000 worth of stock that matured to $300,000. They gave each child $100,000. Then they'd have to pay taxes in that case if it was just a strict inheritance?
Well, if they gave it as a gift and they're still alive, then the children would have to pay the gain.
Yeah.
But
okay.
if they give it through the estate, they both passed away. Dead man curve happened.
Okay.
Thank you.
Got it.
So that wouldn't have been the case. So at death is the step up. Now, what asset doesn't get a step up, Heidi? We'll put her on the spot.
IRAs.
IRAs. See, she got it.
I thought you were talking about the trust.
Yeah.
And I was like,
well, I got it. She didn't follow me. That's happened before. Dennis, we're not following you, period.
You're not going to slip one by Heidi.
Right.
Dennis,
yeah.
One thing I would think that we should point out, you get a step up in basis. So what that means is if you hold on to that J.P. Morgan stock, for an additional 10 years, your basis is when you inherited that. On the date of death, what was it worth? So you're not paying a gain from when the original person bought it. You do get that step up in basis. But if you decide to hold on to that asset, then you would have some gain associated with the sale.
As you're talking, Heidi, I'm thinking, shaking my head here. That's why you need to sit with a financial advisor. Here I am, self-dealing. I get it, but you need to have these conversations individually with folks, whether it's your accountant, attorney, or financial advisor, or all three. You know, maybe they're all three in the same room, and you can't hear yourself think, right? Mm-hmm. Were there other questions as well, Ron?
Well, there was one that I don't know. You might know in general, but it came in the other day, too. It's about, you know, that catastrophic insurance program that the state has? Your auto insurance, for years we've been paying into the catastrophic fund.
Right.
Then they've changed some of the reform. Yeah, people wanted to know how much is in there.
That's more a PNC property and casualty question.
Yeah, I think we'll get somebody involved in this on the air because it has to do with people are losing care now because of the reform. It has to do with the catastrophic fund. So out of your lane, as people like to say.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. So, whenever you're thinking or doing doing these Roth conversions, consult with an advisor or your accountant on these issues. And if you're uncertain of the answer, confirm it with your other professional or professionals. Next, middle age tends to be more complex. Will you have higher taxes in the future? Well, they're guaranteed to go up in 2025 unless we get other politicians in Washington, D.C. So they're due to go up right now under current law in 2025. Second, remember that you have tax-free withdrawals from IRAs. The withdrawals are tax-free. Your principal comes out first tax-free. That's within the first 5 years. After 5 years, the income comes out tax-free. And now as long as you're age 59 and a half, otherwise, then you're going to have to pay a 10% penalty. But there are no then when you get ready for RMDs, required minimum distributions at now age 72, there will not be an RMD or a required minimum distribution. Oh, I forgot about that. So you don't have to take money out of these things.
But you said you take money out of your IRA tax-free?
Yeah.
Your Roth IRA.
If it's a Roth.
Yeah.
Again, talking of conversion. Timing is critical versus your income. Pay attention to what your bracket is, what your income is at middle age, in the middle age area. And then that's where we have this note here. If you have a net operating loss from your business, what a great offset. Well, I got $25,000 in my IRA. Could I convert that? If I have a loss for some reason, I made a significant capital investment in my company, you may. And so what a great free conversion, if you will.
You definitely want to take advantage of those years when something like that happens. So if you have one this year, or maybe you're planning next year to make some changes in your business, you want to use those to the fullest extent so you can get the biggest benefit. And part of that could be a Roth conversion and offset those amounts.
Now, a significant capital investment in your business does not include a Corvette, just for those who are wondering.
Okay.
Now, are you too old to convert? There is no age too old. No age too old. What are some of the reasons? Well, estate planning. For those children who generally will be inheriting, they don't have to take required minimum distributions ever. They do have to drain the account after a 10-year period, but it gives all of that money to them, in essence, tax-free. They will not pay tax on that. What if you live longer than you intended? Well, I'm already 80. How much longer can I live? Most folks way underestimate their life expectancy. And if your children could use tax-free income too, it's just an estate tax consideration as a part of the overall plan. Could they benefit from it? So as long as they are named, that can be significant for them in terms of beneficiaries. So keep in mind, even if you're older, don't think, if you will, just about your own life expectancy. If you're married, obviously he or she would be able to take advantage of that RMD as well, rather that Roth IRA, in that they don't have to take required minimum distributions.
So when you, that 10-year rule, we have to drain it in 10 years, you can leave everything until the last day and take it out then, right?
In the Roth,
yeah,
but not in the regular IRA.
Okay.
Well, it depends on how old the person was who passed away. If the person has already started RMDs in a traditional IRA, then that beneficiary would have to continue taking RMDs and have everything out in 10 years. So that's on the traditional side. It's just a little different.
It is a little different.
But they could take the RMDs. And whatever the lump sum is, they could still wait until the last day and take it all at once, right? If they wanted to.
Right.
If they wanted to.
On the traditional side, that has the big tax bill.
Out.
And that's why when you inherit a Roth, it gives those beneficiaries a lot more freedom, because one, they can delay when they take it out and get earnings tax-free, but also they can they have more choice about which year they were going to take that distribution, because it's not going to affect their tax bill.
Now, the biggest thing to be concerned about or be aware of as an older individual, if you this will increase income, taxable income for you, all right? So this could impact Social Security, taxation of Social Security benefits, rather. and also premiums for Medicare Part B and Part D. So be aware that those premiums can rise dramatically for the 1 year after you have converted. So those premiums increase, and it may be quite a big surprise because those premiums can go up pretty significantly for Medicare.
So one strategy you could have, Dennis, is you could take smaller amounts over a number of years. Instead of like doing $50,000 in 1 year, you could do, you know, $5,000 a year over a number of years.
Correct. So try to get started with it because it is a great strategy to diversify your portfolio, not only by investment, but by taxability.
Right.
Now, the one thing that was shared that was most interesting, in fact, I have a question into Ed Slott, is that we'll be discussing this when the gentleman from Hillsdale comes in, that they were maintaining at this course that you can name a charitable trust as a contingent beneficiary on an IRA and thus avoid the Secure Act limitations. That was a big surprise for us to hear that. So we're confirming it, and we'll be back with that information. Well, we should be next week with clarification on that issue. That could be a huge planning tool in the future. They were maintaining that the IRS has approved this. We have not seen that. We want to confirm it ourselves and also talk about it more in future programs. So there are ever-shifting sands, if you will, on the tax side of these accounts, and it's important to keep posted and keep up to date on what your benefits as well as costs can be in any of these planning tools. All right.
And Dennis, probably for that older group, we should mention one more thing about the RMDs. RMDs are the first, if you're converting from a traditional IRA to a Roth, the first money that comes out of an IRA, a traditional IRA, is an RMD if you're in that age group. So if you're doing a conversion, you have to take that RMD amount out. You cannot convert that to the Roth and then do your Roth conversion. So timing is important. Again, it just pushes you back to, you know, talk to your financial advisor and make sure that you've got these things lined up in the right order, because we don't want to violate any of those rules with all the new IRS agents.
That's right. What a great way to lever your significant saving over the years. It's incredible how these things grow. You know, $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, it goes on and on. So as these things continue to grow, you'll want to take a look at, what are my options with this thing? What can I do? What maybe haven't I considered? So these are all great questions. Today, Americans are putting inflation on the credit card. Heidi, tell us more. What's going on there?
Yes, so the New York Center for Microeconomic Data shows a 13% cumulative year-over-year increase in credit card balances, and that is the largest jump in 20 years. Mm. So this is starting to come in the news, and you'll hear more and more about this. More credit cards are being issued, and especially with the younger crowd, Gen Z, and those are the people under the age of 25, spiked their balances by 30% during the second quarter of this year. And so that just caught my attention, and I thought maybe we should go over some of the things that you don't want to do or things that you do want to do. One is you don't want to pay that credit card bill late. Paying a credit card bill late causes penalties, and they're quite a large amount if you miss that. And in addition, you have your interest payment. And so it just helps you get in trouble faster. So if you are like, wow, I'm going to wait because I know I have this check coming and I want to write a big check and write it off, it's better to send a check in for the minimum and then follow it up with an additional payment. Much better than trying to push that line to that due date and incur a charge. Also, you don't want to be maxing out your credit cards to the full extent. That is not a good indicator for your credit score. And it puts you in a place where you have nowhere to go in an emergency or if you do need to use that. So you want to make sure that you're paying those downs and you're not getting to the point where it's so large that it's going to become a big focus of your budget. If you only make the minimum payment on your credit card, that can lead to trouble because it's not really designed, that minimum payment, for you to pay off the bill. It's for you to pay the interest and keep paying that over time. So only paying the minimum is not going to get that credit card paid off.
Some of the most expensive money you'll have in terms of costs in the range of 15 to 18, 21%. And obviously that can wind up being a lot of money and really put a dent in your overall spending ability over time.
It's true. And so another not so good idea out there is taking out a cash advance from your credit card. It's the most expensive way to pay for things. It's much better to use some other kind of line of credit from the bank or some other situation. Those interest rates on credit cards are extremely high. And oftentimes they add a fee for those credit advances, anywhere from 3 to 5%. So it just makes it a very expensive option by getting that cash advance.
I think about it this way. If it's a 5% fee on the cash advance, that simply means you've been charged that for that month. That's a 60% annualized cost.
That's pretty much.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Another thing that people tend to do is they look for credit card reward programs. Mm-hmm. So chasing that credit card reward is not a good thing. You shouldn't be just buying things because you want to get the points. It's more expensive that way than actually going out and buying the thing usually firsthand.
But if you charge a lot on a card that gives you rewards and you pay it off every month,
that's fine. Yeah. But you shouldn't be just like, oh, I don't need this, but I'm going to buy it because I want more points. That sort of defeats the purpose right there, right?
Right.
So another thing people may do is, you know, we're all looking for those zero interest rates. Maybe they offer that for your zero APR for 6 months. So you may transfer a balance over or you make a big purchase. Well, if you make a big purchase, you want to look at the number of months that you get that zero rate and make it a payment plan. Divide the amount of the purchase by the number of months where you have that 0% so that you can maximize that kind of offer. Going into when you start paying interest, that defeats the idea of that 0%. So if you're going to do that, you have to have good discipline to pay it off before that interest rate kicks in. Another thing is canceling your credit cards. It's good to have a credit card. It helps with your credit score, which can help you in, you know, getting a loan, buying a house, things like that. They look at your credit score. So having a credit card, and maybe if you pay it off monthly, like you said, Ron, that's a good idea. Or if you have one that you haven't used in a long time, just go buy one tank of gas or something on it to keep that card active, to keep that credit score nice and healthy. Another thing is applying for too many credit cards. That goes back to that first point. If you max out one credit card, don't go and get another one and max that one out. That's where we dig ourselves into those big holes that are so hard to get out of. And And another thing you might want to do is check your credit card statement monthly. You want to make sure that maybe things you don't need or want anymore, if you have those automatic payments coming out, get rid of those. Another thing is you want to make sure that no one else has your credit card information and they're charging things on there. So you need to run your eye down those charges each month to help catch any suspicious activity that might be out on your card. So the sooner you discover something like that, the better situation you'll be in.
I think Dave Ramsey has some of the best information on how to avoid that, and or if you are in credit card debt, how to get out. Snowballing those debts, putting aside the credit cards in the bureau drawer, perhaps, avoiding using those at all costs, how to pay those down. Pay them down from the lowest amount first. There are ways you can do this to make this methodical and get control of what's happening with those credit cards. One of the biggest negatives to financial security, I think, is having excess credit card debt. They can really wind up hurting you. And so next are the stats with Deanne.
All right. The Inflation Reduction Act is expected to raise $258 billion over the next decade via a 15% minimum tax on the 150 U.S. companies that have an annual profit of at least $1 billion. And that source is Joint Committee of Taxation.
Hmm.
The Inflation Reduction Act includes $80 billion in the next decade for the IRS, money that will be used to hire 87,000 new IRS employees by the year 2031, increase enforcement efforts, and upgrade the agency's technology and its taxpayer services. The $80 billion cost is projected to result in $124 billion of new tax revenue, and that's from the Senate.
Would you say that's a good investment, Ron?
I want to know where they're going to find 87,000 employees.
This is amazing.
I like how they say increase enforcement efforts.
Of course, they could always simplify the tax code.
And then they wouldn't need
Stop it. Oh, these people out there with their simple solutions, it just drives you crazy sometimes, doesn't it?
The last time normal retirement age for monthly Social Security benefits was raised was in 1983. 75% of 2,545 registered voters who were surveyed in April and May of 2022 support raising the normal retirement age again today in order to protect the solvency of the program. And that is from the Program of Public Consultation.
Okay, what was that number again? That was interesting.
75%
of 2,045 registered voters voted to raise.
Small sample, but that's pretty... Mm-hmm. Pretty surprising.
Yeah. I think it would make sense, especially given that they have a few years to do it, just like they increased the full retirement age. Why not increase the minimum retirement age from 62 to 64.25 or, you know, whatever they decide.
Right.
Yep. Increase it. Yeah.
That's doing something in the right direction, because if we just leave it the way it is, we're going to get into a crisis situation. So these sort of things make a lot of sense.
Absolutely. It doesn't take a huge amount of change to really make a big difference in that. And that whole plan. Go for it, Deanne.
Very good. As of June 30th, 2003, credit card debt in the U.S. was almost three times the size of student loan debt in the nation. By June 30th, 2010, credit card debt was smaller than student loan debt. As of June 30th, 2022, credit card debt, which is $890 billion, is dwarfed by the student loan debt, which is $1.59 trillion. That's Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of student loan debt. The total household debt in the United States reached a record of $16.15 trillion as of June 30, 2022. 70.5% of the total is mortgage debt, which is $11.39 trillion, also an all-time record. However, an estimated 23% of all U.S. households are debt-free, and the source is Federal Reserve Bank of New York. That's great, 23%.
Yeah.
It is.
Good job to those people.
Yes.
That takes
incredible.
A lot of discipline. Yep.
We've talked to, in terms of clients thinking about paying off debt early and getting that done, especially at retirement, and I told them, I've never heard a retiree say, you know, I'm sorry we paid off the mortgage. Mm-hmm. Never happened. So, yeah, it's a great thing to shoot for, mm-hmm. a great goal to have.
Absolutely.
You bet. So we're going to talk about Social Security. Heidi actually has some great information on the COLA and is set to hit a 40-year leap. What is that all about? Please.
Right. So Social Security benefits have been indexed to inflation since about 1975 via annual cost of living adjustments, and that's where we get the acronym COLA. During that nearly half century, COLA has approached or topped double digits only three times. So that it's quite rare for us to be approaching a year. And right now, they're looking at a 10.5% increase, and that's just an estimate by the Senior Citizen League, which is TSCL. So that is their estimate for this year, 10.5, and that does not get calculated until the end of September, I think.
Wow, that's a big number. So it's never hit that It's hit that only three other times. Is that right?
Three times.
What you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yep, that is figured. It says, and then it becomes effective in December. So the first payment affected will be January.
Be January, and that obviously means that anyone who is in the $2,000 or so range, your income's going to go up. $2,000 a month is going to go up by about $200 or so, depending on the level of the increase. At $3,000 a month, of course, then it goes up by $300 or so. So those are some relatively significant increases. Now, we don't know what they're going to correspondingly increase Medicare insurance premiums by.
Right, and that's my next point, because we're all like, wow, yay, Social Security, you're getting an increase. This is great. But, you know, you got to think of the ramifications of some of this stuff. And some of that is just what you said, is that Medicare and medical expenses are going up. So Medicare premiums may go up as well. So that's going to eat into any increase that you may get on Social Security. So in 2022, the standard Medicare Part B premium increased by 14.5%. So that just gives you an idea of, okay, the income's going up, but so is the expense.
Yeah, if that wasn't the biggest increase we've ever seen, I think it would be way up there near the top in terms of the total Medicare premium increase. It was a big increase, and so it wouldn't be a surprise to see that go up again.
Right, yeah. And another thing to keep in mind when that income goes up is it could cost you more in tax. Social Security has three categories. There's a category where none of the benefits are taxed. There's another category where 50% of your Social Security benefits are taxed. And then the highest group is 85% of your benefits are taxed. So that is all based on income.
50% is the middle? They take 50% of your Social Security benefits as taxed?
No, they look at 50% of what you received.
Oh,
yeah, and they
okay,
put that
they
goes
that.
Into your income for taxes. So
that's figured in with your income. Right.
And the little nuance here is these thresholds have never been increased since they were put in place decades ago. So more and more people are creeping into those higher and higher percentage groups. So
yeah, I'm actually trying to remember when that was incepted. I thought it was during the Bush administration, George H.W. Bush, you bet.
They don't have that year here. So another thing is how inflation impacts claiming with your full retirement age. So whether you take it early and you're taking a lower amount, then your COLA is going to be figured on your lower benefit versus waiting to full retirement age and getting your full benefit and the COLA based on that number. So when you're claiming, thinking about, yes, this is something that gets an increase based on the COLA, but what amount is that based on? It's based on if you get it early, it's based on that lower amount versus your full retirement age when you get your full benefit, then that COLA is going to be applied to that full benefit.
Isn't that interesting? So they're going to have to refigure then the dollar amounts that retirees are going to be getting. So SSA.gov can be an even more important website to review in terms of what your benefits are going to be. And let's take a call here, if you would, Ron.
In Traverse City, it's Billy. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dennis. I have a question. My mother gets Social Security benefits, but she also gets out of state a teacher retirement benefit for the years that she was working in the schools. And every year they send her an adjustment. So for example, this year she got a $6 increase from her teacher retirement payout, but then she has to report that to Social Security, and Social Security reduces her benefit because of that. And I'm just wondering if there's any way to simplify this for her, because we're just talking a couple of dollars a year, but it's a lot of headache, a lot of hoops she's jumping through to make sure she's not being overpaid or underpaid.
Well, so what you're saying is she's already retired, fully retired, and she's getting a correspondingly lower benefit from Social Security as a result of her pension?
Yes. Every time she gets an increase in her pension, it's the cost of living from her teacher retirement.
Right.
She has to report that to SSA, and then they lower her.
Because they're charging more tax. They're withholding more tax. That's what's going on.
Okay.
So
okay.
I would really caution you on. I don't know that you have to do that. We're into the tax realm now, but I would consult with your accountant. If she's got one or you do, consult with them. I'm not sure that you've got to report it directly to Social Security. The only reason you're doing that, I think, because I'm obviously we're not talking here individually, but because they're withholding more tax. So I would say I don't know that you've got to do that, but consult with your tax advisor on this, okay?
Alrighty. Thanks,
because
sir.
Yeah, you're probably getting into something you probably really don't have to in reporting that kind of detail to them. All right?
Okay. Alrighty.
Take care.
Dennis.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you, Bill. In Traverse City, it's about 5 before the top of the hour. I thought we had a question here. Let me check.
Sure, you bet.
Somebody said, is the increase in credit card debt that Heidi mentioned because prices of goods have increased so much?
Yeah, that's the theory. Well, the most recent dollar amount, I just read it this morning. I think I read it accurately, where it was, Deanne, you quoted it was $16 trillion. At the end of June.
Correct.
I think it's now near $19 trillion. So that's the theory, is because the cost of living has increased that much that people are going to their credit cards and their credit card debt availability and using that to fund their current life expenses. So it's really something. We were talking about this before the show, that the things that people had to do to overcome in their personal budgets, those crazy inflation of the 70s mm-hmm. were significant. And so there's going to have to be some real cutting that goes on in household budgets, I think. It's not going to be fun. And so it's really starting to measure in there.
Well, you think about it, if, like, say you're buying your gasoline with a credit card every month and you used to pay it off, but now it costs so much more that maybe you can't pay off that bill every month. And so then you're just adding and adding, and those balances are growing. So that could be another reason for it. There's so many areas. Groceries cost more, gas costs more, travel. All that stuff.
So. Generation Z, you said, also was seeing their credit card debt go up?
Yeah,
it might be the younger people.
They said Gen Z's credit card balances, and they're defining that as people under the age of 25, it spiked 30% just in the second quarter. So that would have been April, May, and June.
So awesome. Younger people.
Yeah.
Spending more on credit cards.
It almost sounds to me like they've not really kept track of it, and the piper's going to be paid here pretty quickly as they start noticing these bills coming in, and how am I going to take care of this, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like a slow creep on people as those prices get higher and higher.
Well, so beware out there, right?
Right.
Yeah, watch that stuff.
All right, New Retirement Radio. Today's show repeats Saturday morning at 9, and we'll be back live next Thursday. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Deanne Jennings, thank you kindly all.
Thanks a lot, Ron. Have
thank you, Ron.